Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
It's Real College Podcast. I'm Patrick Sharkey. Today's show, all about sports. I know, I can hear your eyes rolling from here. The last thing really anyone cares about these days is sports. But we've got a pretty good show for you lined up. Some of the more wacky side of sports. A story about dog sledding, the business side of the NBA. That's kind of interesting, too. And we're going to learn about Quidditch right here on today's Real College Podcast. Two years ago, thousands of Minnesota Timberwolves fans could feel their luck finally changing.
Good evening, and welcome to the 2015 NBA Draft.
Because the Timberwolves had the rights to the first overall draft pick.
The first pick in the 2015 NBA Draft, the Minnesota Timberwolves select Karl Anthony. Yeah!
Karl Anthony Towns, the highly touted center from the University of Kentucky, was to be the centerpiece to lead the team back to the playoffs for the first time since 2004, which is the longest playoff drought of any team in the NBA. But fast forward to earlier this month. It's Wednesday, it's 35 degrees and it's raining, and it's an hour before the Timberwolves tip off against the New York Knicks. But the streets outside the Target Center are eerily quiet. Traffic cops, direct cars, and a few pedestrians. And the closer you get to the arena, the more ticket scalpers you see. They're doing anything possible to sell their large swath of tickets that they keep bound by rubber bands in their back pockets. One of them physically forces two tickets into my hand, but then when he sees I have a microphone, he begins to rap.
Everything happens for a reason. I'm killing everything because I caught a killer season. I be running around.
The truth is, the Wolves have ranked dead last in average per-game attendance the last two seasons, which means barely anyone got to see Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins win Rookie of the Year in two consecutive seasons. It's widely believed across the league that the Wolves have the best young roster in the NBA. So why do the Wolves struggle so much to get fans to show up for these games?
Because of lack of loyalty and lack of patience.
If anyone knows anything about loyalty and patience, it's John Bruns, who's been a season ticket holder for the Timberwolves since their inaugural season in 1989.
People are bandwagon people. They're there for a couple, three, four games, and like this year, well, there was pretty good crowds to begin with, and it didn't take too long that they were jumping off that bandwagon like crazy because of the lack of loyalty.
Patience and loyalty is something the Wolves front office is asking for as well. Here's Brad Ryder, Vice President of Communications for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
You know, we're very excited about the future, but the fact is that right now it's going to take them some time to develop. It has been a while since we've been to the playoffs, so I think it's going to maybe take a while for that to resonate into huge numbers attendance-wise, but we do feel the buzz in the community.
For a team that's lost considerably more games than they've won in the last 12 seasons, it's kind of hard to continue to have patience. But John says it's not a problem for him.
We're Timberwolves fans, but we're also basketball fans. And you go to an NBA game, you're going to see some good basketball.
It's true. It's the NBA. It's basketball at its finest. But a quick survey of some Timberwolves message boards will tell you that it's not just the product on the floor that's keeping fans from buying tickets. Complaints range from expensive concessions at the Target Center to uncomfortable seats to obnoxious in-arena announcers. But the single biggest issue that keeps coming up is the franchise's switch to the use of a company called Flash Seats to sell and distribute tickets to the games.
This is a much, much, much easier, more convenient way for people to attend our games. And again, you know, there's a faction of people who initially, you know, when you change anything and when you make a drastic change to anything, it's going to take a while for people to get adjusted to it. But now that we're about a year and a half in, you know, we receive very few complaints anymore. People have gotten used to it. Even the people who weren't big fans of it have been converted by and large that the system is convenient and that it'll work for them.
Flash Seats does have some appeal. All tickets are digital and are kept within an app, and it's 2016. We love our apps. Plus, it helps speed up the process of getting through security at each game. But there's a lot of downside as well. If you want to sell your tickets, it has to be done through the app. And Flash Seats adds fees on top of that, which it then splits with the Timberwolves. They also have a sale price floor, which means you can't sell your tickets for less than 75% of the value of each ticket. You can see why this is appealing for an NBA franchise. They essentially get to double dip on all ticket transactions, even tickets in the third-party market. However, John Bruns, season ticket holder since 1989, says not so fast.
It was just as convenient the old way. And we found it very difficult to sell tickets through Flash Seats because of the plus 20% that they add. And that's one of the reasons that we're not getting the attendance that we should have, I think, because it used to be you could sell tickets just about any time. Now there's a minimum that you can charge. It is affecting attendance, in my opinion.
The Wolves are averaging 13,000 tickets sold per game, which is over 1,000 less than the next team. And that's tickets sold, not the actual amount of people who are attending these games. Compare that to the Chicago Bulls, who lead the league in attendance by selling an average of 22,000 tickets per game. When watching a Timberwolves game on TV, it feels like there are a lot more empty seats than there are full. And if you go to a game in person, you can often hear the opposing team's fans cheering louder than Wolves fans. It's pretty bleak. And it'd be one thing if this roster was a dumpster fire, but the makeup of this team is a lot more like the rosters from the early 2000s. Those teams had guys like Kevin Garnett and Stephon Marbury. But the Wolves have household names on their roster now, with the likes of Karl-Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, and Zach LaVine. The Timberwolves of the early 2000s had no problem selling out their games. Which is to say, there are plenty of basketball fans in this state. And while not everyone will agree on the best way to sell tickets to fans, there's one tried and true solution to getting fans to show up.
Wins. It takes wins. That's the society that we live in.
For Real College Podcast, I'm Patrick Sharkey.
Olha que coisa mais linda, mais cheia de graça. Ela, menina que vem e que passa. Doce balanço, caminho do mar. Moça do corpo dourado, do sol de Ipanema. O seu balanço.
Originally limited to the fictional world of Harry Potter, Quidditch is now a sport available to wizards and muggles alike all across the globe. Last Wednesday, reporter Emily Allen sat down with PR chair Callie O'Neill from Minnesota Quidditch to learn more about the team.
When I started at the U, I had orientation, and one of my orientation leaders played Quidditch. And I mentioned that I was looking for a contact sport to play because in high school there was not really a contact sport for girls to play. And she was like, I have the sport for you.
Meet Callie O'Neill, a member of the Minnesota Quidditch team. Callie also serves as the team's public relations chair.
So we have a Quidditch board, and that involves like the president, vice president, secretary, treasurer. I'm the public relations chair, so anything you see on the social media for the Snapchat, the Twitter, Facebook, or like the Yule Ball event page, that's me.
Do you know much about the history outside of the U, like how Quidditch as a sport got started in general?
I believe it got started in Middlebury College. It originally, you were able to wear capes. We had like actual like wooden brooms you'd run around on. The snitch could go anywhere. Currently, the rule is that the snitch has to stay on the pitch. But in the past, we had snitches that would get in cars and hitchhike across campus. We had snitches that would climb trees, kind of scale building walls. And just generally, it was called snitch shenanigans is that general thing, which now has been mostly outlawed just for legality of play reasons, and making sure everyone stays safe.
So I guess focusing more maybe on the history of the team, how did the U's team get started?
So we had, I want to say Luke, Zach, and a few others started a team 7 years ago. That original team kind of lasted the first year or two, but then there was some tension and they split into a community team, TC Frost. And then Minnesota Quidditch. They just have different ideas about the direction they want to take with the team and practice styles.
So how long has Minnesota Quidditch been a nonprofit?
From the very beginning, for the last 7 years. We do Kiddage events, where we go into schools and we'll teach elementary schoolers how to play Quidditch. It's no contact for little ones, but it's still similar. So Quidditch works by, you have brooms, which are now PVC pipe, so that they're safer. And each player has to have that between their legs at all times. As far as positions go, there's the chasers, the beaters, and the seekers, and the keepers. The chasers are the ones who are taking the quaffle, the deflated volleyball, and putting it through one of three hoops on the opposing team's side. That is their goal. A goal is 10 points. The keepers can do the exact same thing, but they have the ability to stick their arm through their own hoop to deflect a ball from going through. The beaters, and that's the position I play, I'm a little bit fond of it, they are the defensive players more often than not. They're playing a glorified game of dodgeball. There are three bludgers on the pitch, and the bludger is kind of a deflated kickball. And there are two beaters on each team. Each team of beaters is going to be fighting for getting that second bludger on their side because it gives them a better edge for defense, because they're going to be throwing those bludgers at the opposing team members to knock them off their brooms, which will send them back to their hoops, which means that there's less opponents on their side of the field trying to get the ball through the hoop. The seekers are the ones that are chasing the snitch. So to talk about the snitch a little bit, the snitch is generally a cross-country runner, like a speedy person or a very physical, like a wrestler type person that has a ball and a sock hanging off the back of their pants. So they are the only player that's not on a broom. They are free to run around and shove people and just get in the way of things. And the seeker's goal is to grab the ball off the back of their pants. That is their sole only goal. That snitch grab is worth 30 points, and that ends the game, unless it's tied. If it's tied, it goes into overtime.
How do you choose a snitch? Is that like a goalie, like as a designated person, or is it just whoever raises their hand?
So they can choose to be a snitch if they want to. As long as they do not play for either team that is currently trying to catch the snitch, then it doesn't matter. We just need an unbiased player.
There are a lot of rules on how to play Quidditch, and Callie says there are also a lot of rules on how to play Quidditch safely.
Are injuries common in Quidditch?
We've done really well this year. None of our players have gotten injured, not even a concussion this year, as far as I'm aware. In the past, we've had a player that has broken their wrist in the middle of the game and kept playing on it. There have been sprained ankles. A common beater injury is like to sprain your thumb. There's been broken legs, a lot of concussions. The IQA, the International Quidditch Association, has required mouth guards now that have significantly reduced the number of concussions that we've got, and there's always a medic on site in order to take care of things for tournaments if someone gets injured. It's a requirement that we stay safe.
Earlier in our interview, Callie said she was attracted to Quidditch for being a co-ed contact sport.
So there are no just men or women-only teams?
Not at all. That's what's made Quidditch stand out to a lot of people, is that it is a completely co-ed sport that has led to some interesting strategies. Interesting being my very Minnesotan way of saying that I don't think the female players are always utilized to their best ability. You'll often find them being placed behind the hoops to catch the ball back there, but they will not be the one to run the ball up through the center of the field, which I understand to a point, because you've got giant dudes that physically, men are generally bigger human beings than women. But we can be just as fast and just as fierce. So I want to see a switch as Quidditch develops more. I want to see our female players being utilized because they're smart and they're speedy and they can take a hit just like anyone else.
I guess I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I have one question. You said you got into Harry Potter recently afterward. So which house would you consider yourself, if that matters?
I am absolutely a Hufflepuff. I am the most Hufflepuff of the Hufflepuffs.
What would you say a majority of the Quidditch team is?
Probably Gryffindor and Ravenclaw. A vast majority of them have that fighting spirit and the knowledge of the sport, so.
Whether you're a Hufflepuff or a Gryffindor, wizard or muggle, Quidditch is open to everyone. Callie says their spring intramural league starts after spring break. It lasts 5 weeks, every Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m. at the East River Flats behind Kauffman Student Union. For Real College Podcast, I'm Emily Allen.
When When I think of dog sledding, I don't really think of it as a sport for humans. Seems like a lot of running by dogs and a lot of sitting by human beings. And while many people don't necessarily pay attention to it, for those who actually partake in the sport, it sounds like it's more of a lifestyle than anything else. Emily LePain brings you the story.
Yep, it's a sport. I'd almost say you have to call it a lifestyle because it's 24/7 care. You have to be in it all day, every day. I mean, their care comes first, feeding, watering, making sure all their needs are met. So it is a sport, but it is more of a lifestyle too.
That's Aaron Becker, the vice president of the North Star Sled Dog Club, one of the oldest sled dog clubs in the continental U.S. I drove up to Little Falls, Minnesota to meet her dogs and get a deeper look at the inner workings of sled dog racing. Now, many of you may be thinking, sled dogs are still a thing? Very much so. For me, sled dogs and mushing culture was a big part of my Alaskan childhood, as I was fascinated with the sport when I was young. I witnessed the start of the Iditarod and the finishes of the Yukon Quest as the mushers raced to the finish on the frozen waters of the Chena River. But Becker's interest in the sport was sparked due to one musher in particular, Susan Butcher.
When I was 9, my grandpa, on my mom's side, he and I used to sit every time I would come over and read the National Geographic magazine together. And one article was about Susan Butcher, who's a really famous female musher, and she's done the Iditarod.
For those of you who have never heard of her, Susan Butcher is probably the most famous musher in the history of the sport. She was the second female to win the Iditarod, finishing first in 1986. She went on to win 3 more times and finished in the top 4 6 separate times. She died of leukemia in 2006.
I don't even remember what the article was about, but all I saw was a girl and dogs, and I'm like, yep, that's what I want to do. I want sled dogs. I'm going to do the Iditarod. So I started planning, and I'm like, well, I need a sled. So he helped me build this, I don't know if you could really call it a sled, but it kind of looks like a sled. Forced the farm dogs to pull me around on it, and it just kind of all went downhill from there. So.
And even though that experience was what first gave Becker a glimpse of what the sport was like, her makeshift sled she built with her grandfather was nothing like the real thing.
So once I finally got on an actual sled and had actual sled dogs pulling me, it's completely different. Like, they're so ready to go, and the speed is incredible when it's a lot of fun.
In fact, Becker says that the energy and feeling of running her team of dogs is a lot like managing a peewee hockey team.
They're all super excited at the start, and then once you get going, everyone starts mellowing out and listening and paying attention.
But the way the team runs and how they interact with each other is, in large part, dependent on the personalities of the dogs themselves.
I look for, first, like, attitude and drive. I want to see that they enjoy that they're running and they're pulling, that they want to be on the team. And then I look for dogs that kind of look to me. So the more they're in tune with me, the better it is for my team. I have a little bit of everything out here. I have the super happy, I have the very quiet, mellow, and then I have a couple little crabbier ones. So it's kind of fun. Like, all the different personalities keep you guessing.
Mushing, in and of itself, is a different variety of team sport in that most of your team consists of dogs. But for Becker, that's one of the best parts of the sport.
Being able to have a team of all of my four-legged best friends and being able to spend time with them out on a trail, it's peaceful and quiet. I get all my best thinking done out there.
But it isn't just the dogs. Becker is one of the only people in her town of Little Falls, Minnesota, that races sled dogs. So for her, part of the joy that comes from the sport is grounded within the racing community.
I think my favorite part about racing is actually getting to go and be with a whole group of people that enjoy what I do. Because you really, like, down here, you don't really get to see other teams, and my dogs don't get to see other teams. So, like, racing is when you get to actually go and see people and see how your training stacked up to everybody else's mm-hmm. training.
At the same time, it's not just a matter of being in a group of people that love what you do. Becker's love for the sport goes beyond that, also stemming from how anyone can excel.
It always amazes me what women mushers at that time were able to accomplish, because it was a man's sport back then. So to win, and to win well, and to have such incredible dog care and have such incredible training techniques that people still use today, I hate to say feminism, but it's fun to see women excel in sports. Like, sled dog racing is an even playing field. you have advantages if you're a guy, but you also have advantages if you're a female. So it's really fun to see women excel in a sport that's actually an even field.
That's the great thing about sled dog racing. The group is very inclusive and the playing field is incredibly level. And one could imagine that this level playing field would create an atmosphere that would foster a feeling of camaraderie that might not be found in other sports.
Yeah, I mean, it's all inclusive. Pretty much any age, gender, race, religion, anyone can do it. If you have the time and you have the ambition and the love of the dogs, anybody can do this sport.
For Real College Podcast, I'm Emily LePain.
That's all we have for you this week. Contributing to today's show was Emily Allen, Emily LePain, and me, Patrick Sharkey. The show is produced by Jacob Maldonado Medina, Max Fuller, Emily Allen, and Emily LePain. The show is edited by me, Patrick Sharkey. Radio K's Real College Podcast airs every Monday night at 6:30 on RadioK.org, and old episodes can be heard there as well. Plus, be sure to subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Patrick Sharkey. Thanks for listening.